So we've been walking through the book of Exodus. We started this 3 weeks ago. We're in our third week. The first week we talked about how the Israelites started off in Egypt as honored guests of Egypt, and they ended up being tricked into slavery, and they gave up their freedom for comfort. We talked last week about how the choices of two women saved a generation, and today we're going to talk about something different again. And so we're moving on into the second book of Exodus, and the topic today is about dreamers, which means that probably some of you can go home. It seems to me that there's like two groups of people in the world. There are dreamers, and those people irritated by dreamers. And so I thought, well, I could almost send half my congregation home. I could just say, would all dreamers please raise their hands? But then I thought, that's not going to work because dreamers aren't paying attention to me by now anyway. So anyway, so everybody stay. Don't anybody leave. But so we're going to talking about dreams today, but specifically dreams that are different maybe than what we always say, you need to have a dream, you know. Of course, there's a famous Martin Luther King, I have a dream speech. That's more on the lines of what we're talking about with dream, because when I ask most people the dreams that they have for their lives, that's usually that, you know, I'll be rich, I'll be famous, I'll be beautiful and well-loved, and that's not really the dreams we're talking about here. Everybody has those dreams. I want a bigger house, a bigger car, a better job, but that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about really is the idea of dreams being given to us by God. And we've been kind of a theme that's run through several sermons here for the past several weeks is that we have to have God's prophetic word in our life. And we're talking about God's prophetic word in our life, which give us our dreams. Our dreams is a purpose. Acts is actually quoting a scripture from the Old Testament, says this, "It shall come to pass in those days, says God, that I will pour out my spirit, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions. Your old men shall dream dreams." I just want to say for the record, I'm not dreaming dreams yet, so I'm proud of that. But anyway, so God gives us this, so it's okay to dream. It's not a bad thing. And I believe that God will actually give you a dream. It'll be a purpose, something inside of you that just feels like it has to come out, and it'll drive your decisions. And this is God's purpose for you. He wants you to have that. He wants you to have his purpose for your life. So we're talking about God planted dreams here. And I know I'm walking into some dangerous territory here because I'm going to compare having a dream from God to being pregnant without ever having been pregnant. I've never been pregnant. I never will be pregnant. But still, bear with me here. And I know that a lot of people here have been pregnant. Give me some grace, okay? I'm going to walk through this a little bit here. But it is when God gives you a dream, it's a lot like that because of these things. First of all, it doesn't just come from you. It's a shared thing. God gives it to you, and then you kind of help incubate it, and you take possession of it, but it's given to you by God. It's given to you for a purpose, and it changes you. At first, in great ways, right? When it first happens, you almost, like when you first get a sense and a purpose, and like you realize that there's a reason for your life, and that there's something beyond just the day-to-day grind, you start feeling there's something about that. You know, with a little bounce to your step, you might even say you have a glow about you, right? So when this first starts, but sometimes it ends up making people look at you strangely. You know, when you walk in a room or you start talking to people, because you're reacting to things just flat out differently than other people, because things that bother you don't bother other people, because he is working in you to change you. Now, I want to say, by the way, this is going to turn into a two-part sermon. I didn't want to cram a bunch of stuff on you. That's the deal. We always do this. I'm going to go ahead and do a two-part sermon, but that means you all have to come back next week. So, but we're going to talk more about exactly how to identify the dreams that God has given you. But when you get that, it will change you, and people will start looking at you strangely, and eventually it will change you in ways you didn't expect. And in fact, it'll change you sometimes in ways you don't necessarily even like, but it is changing. And of course, sometimes it just seems too big for you. It almost seems, especially as it goes on, right? Just too big, too big. This can't be me. But this is maybe the most scary bullet point here is before it's over, there's going to be great pain. And it will happen. But the good news is the final bullet point, which is you always think in the end that it was worth it. In fact, you will join millions and millions of people who have gone before you, by the way, and say, you know what? It was worth it. It was worth all the changing. It was worth all the pain. It was worth all of that. You're almost sorry that it's over. You know? And so anyway, that is the kind of dream we're talking about, the dream that God plants inside of you, which will just kind of, if you let it, give you focus in your life. And that's what we're going to do. So we're going to talk about how this happened with Moses. And we're going to have to look at a couple scriptures here, not just in Exodus, in order to get the whole picture here. But we talked about this last week, so I'm going to kind of really gloss over this part. But there's a little neat thing that happens that I skipped over last week that I want to pick up this week. But we talked about how Pharaoh had set out his edict that all male babies needed to be drowned. And Moses' mother decides she can't do that, so she puts him in a little boat and sends him down the Nile, where he's discovered by the princess, one of the people who live in the palace with Pharaoh, and goes and gets it and realizes this is one of those Hebrew babies, but she can't kill it either, even though it's a law. Her dad passed that law, and she still won't obey it, so she decides that she doesn't want to kill the child. And as soon as that happens, Moses' sister, someone named Miriam, who is falling around looking at it, the mom couldn't look. She just couldn't see what would happen to this poor baby she put in the river. But the sister was following along to see what happens. And as soon as she sees this princess pick him up and is interested in the baby, the sister says, "Do you want me to go find a Hebrew woman who maybe could nurse her? I think I might know somebody who could nurse her." You know, it's her mom, right? And so the princess says, "Sure." Now, this is interesting. This woman, by the way, later on becomes a ruler in Egypt. We don't know that from the Bible, but we know that from history. And she's no dummy. And so she says, "Take this baby and nurse him, and I will pay you." I believe that she knew exactly who Miriam was. She knew that, you know, probably figured it out, that's the sister, and probably knew that was the mom. "I'll pay you." Now, you can't pay for a baby, and even Pharaoh's daughter knew this, but I think she just wanted to say, "Look, I know what you're giving up here. I want to help a little bit." So she decided to pay her for this service. And it's kind of cool because Moses then goes back to his mom, and she nurses him, and she gets to spend a few more months with him before he is called away. Now, he's actually placed in Pharaoh's court, but which unbeknownst to the mom, he's actually been called apart for God's service. And so she eventually goes and becomes the son of this princess, which means he grows up in the palace. Now, Moses writes the book of Exodus. And it's interesting to me the stuff that he includes and the stuff he kind of skips over. And there's a sometime later here in the Bible. It's like later. And he skips through decades of his life. It doesn't say anything about them at all. I found that odd because a lot of stuff happened that we don't know about now. And I think it's interesting that Moses skips it. And I think it shows that he wrote this much later in his life. He wasn't keeping a journal. He wrote looking back. And this part of his life, I think he would rather just kind of gloss over a little bit, because he grows up as a prince of Egypt, and he probably did a lot of things he wasn't necessarily proud of as he lived as Pharaoh's prince. And so then he picks up the story later, sometime later. It came about in those days, it's all we know from Moses, when he'd grown up, that he went out to his brethren, that's the Israelites, and looked on their hard labors, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brothers. Now the word used here for brother, the Hebrew word here, is actually very specific, one of his blood. So it could mean just kind of an Israelite, but most theologians believe this was literally Aaron, his brother. So he sees him being beat. So he goes down there to visit, and he sees this. Now, I know that movies love to make the moment Moses discovers that he's an Israelite a big surprise, but I don't think it was to him at all. His name, by the way, brought out from water, has a Hebrew equivalent as well, which means brought out from God. So I believe that he was named in such a way that told him he was Hebrew, and I think he grew up knowing that, you know, his origin was Hebrew. But anyway, so he's looking and he sees an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brothers. And then, I love this, he looked this way and that way. Look this, look that, no one's watching. And he struck and killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. So just as a point of order, in case you're ever wondering, the looking this way and that rarely precedes righteousness. So just, you know, in your own life, if you find yourself looking this way and that way and you're wondering if it's being God ordained what you're about to do, probably no. Unless you're crossing a street, then you can look this way and that. But other than that, I mean, whatever else, you're probably not going to do something righteous after that. And he didn't. He killed him. And that's all he tells about, you know, and he moves on with the story. And I thought, well, that's, you know, where else can we go to find this? Well, fortunately, the Holy Spirit, I believe, wanted more detail in the story. And I think Moses says, "I'm not talking about that." And so the Holy Spirit has Stephen talk about that. We have to go all the way up to the book of Acts, and Stephen is being called before a trial, and he's connecting all the dots for the Sanhedrin. And he's telling the story, kind of God's story, in Acts chapter 7, and he gets to Moses, and he fills in detail that Moses left out, and I just think this is great. So I'm going to back up. I'm going to show you some of the things that Stephen told us that Moses didn't want to say. He was maybe being a little too humble to say, but he says, this is Stephen talking, Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians. By the way, that was the best learning of the day. He would have by far been better educated than you know, 95% of the population, because the Egyptian courts had all the learning. So he learned civic law, he learned architecture, he learned history, he learned mathematics, he learned science. He was well educated, and this is of course because God is going to use him to start the nation of Israel. So although he did not know it, he was being educated in government learning so that he could help set up the government. So God was preparing him for his ultimate destiny. He had no idea. But I love this. He was a man of power in words and deeds. Now, kind of stick a pin in that. I'm going to come back to that in a couple weeks. But I love that little phrase, a man of power in words and deeds. But when he was approaching the age of 40, so, you know, Moses says some time passed. Stephen says 40 years passed. So he was a prince of Egypt for 40 years. It entered into his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. I believe what Stephen's saying is the Holy Spirit led him to go visit the sons of Israel. So he spent 40 years as a prince of Egypt, and he was well known. He was a man of power in words and deeds. He was famous in Egypt. Like, well, where did all this come from? You know, where, this seems like there's a lot missing here that you would have thought Moses would stick in his autobiography there. What is this? And I don't know if anybody saw the movie that came out this past year, Exodus, Gods and Kings. It's this kind of a retelling a little bit. It's Hollywood's version of the Moses story. But it stars Christian Bale. And they have this scene at the beginning of it, and it, you might think, man, where did this come from? This is actually somewhat historical, what we see that when they're fighting off the Ethiopians. I don't know if you saw this movie, but there's a scene in it at the beginning of it. Moses is a man of such power that even physics doesn't apply to him. But I just love this scene. They almost get this right, because there was a battle between Egypt and Ethiopia that was truly there, and Moses was there. They kind of get it wrong a little bit, because they show this son of Pharaoh who leads the army, and according to history, that's not how it worked. So we have to now go over to a guy named Josephus, who is a historian of the day, some out of the Bible a little bit, and he wrote about this at some length about what Moses did. Now, Josephus was not a Jewish person of the faith. He was a historian, kind of a somewhat unbiased side. And we also see, by the way, some of this is in the annals of Egyptian history. So Moses was a figure that for sure lived and for sure did these things, and we see him from different places. But I love what Josephus kind of fills in some of this. When Moses reached his manhood, there was a great battle fought between the forces of Egypt and Ethiopia. Now, Ethiopia was kind of the south of Egypt, and then the Israelites, they settled in Goshen, which was the north of Egypt. So Egypt is almost a country, but they had these buffer states that protected them. And the Ethiopians were always revolting. They were big trouble. In fact, in Egyptian history, there's some talk amongst the Pharaoh and his counselors. This is before they start afflicting the Israelites. That he says, we're going to do this. We're going to afflict the Israelites, which we talked about last week. And his advisor said, why would you do that? The Ethiopians are the problem. So the Israelites were never a problem. There was no reason for them to do what they did. It's what we talked about last week, that the God of this world will always fight the God of heaven. There was no reason for it other than that. But anyway, but the Ethiopians were always problems. And so they did a revolt, only this time they were victorious. And they started conquering, they started encroaching upon Egyptian land. And their armies invaded the land of Egypt as far as Memphis and the sea. So they're moving up, and it scared them. It's like a big revolt and uprising, and they had thrown some armies at them, and the Ethiopians just rolled right over them. So they're coming to the capital of Egypt, and they're frightened. So, of course, Pharaoh does what Pharaoh will do. He goes and consults his oracles. And when he does that, the oracles and diviners urged them to make Moses the commander of Pharaoh's army. And so they did. So instead of having his son or any of the generals, they take this relatively unknown person who was in there, you know, obviously he was serving in the army, and they put him in charge of the entire army. And Moses goes out, and he comes upon the Ethiopians before they expected him. So he force marched, and he split his troops, if you read this whole account. And joining the battle with them, he beat them and deprived them of the hopes they had of success against the Egyptian, and then went on in overthrowing their cities, and indeed made great slaughter of the Ethiopians. So Moses not only beats them in the battle, he drives them all the way back, and then they take, you know, tribute from them. So he wipes them out, and he becomes famous in Egypt for his great deeds. So, you know, Stephen wasn't just making this up. He knew about this. It was well known in the time. So this was what we see. So, you know, Moses is pretty tough guy. You know, he's really famous. And this actually kind of sets up what happens soon, because he has risen so fast in the ranks, and the population loves him. This is why Pharaoh needs to get rid of him at the first opportunity he gets. This kind of sets up the background of what happens next. So, going back now, when he saw one of them was being treated unjustly, went just back him looking at the Egyptian beating the Hebrew, he took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And watch this, he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. See, I believe Stephen's telling us here that God places in his heart this vision that you will be the deliverer of Israel. And so when he went down to see them, he went down with this vision in his heart. And God had placed this dream in him. And when he saw then, for the first time, because I'm sure he saw this before, but when he saw on that day the Egyptian being the Hebrew, he was like, no, this can't stand. And I am to be the deliverer. And so this dream inside of him welled up. And interestingly, the word here is he struck him. He hit him one time. I don't believe he actually meant to kill the guy. I just felt he was just so filled with anger, because he had the righteous anger, because this dream he had of delivering the Israelites, a vision placed in by God, that he just went and hit the guy so hard he killed him. And then he buries him in the sand so no one would find the body. Now, he's saying God's going to grant them deliverance. He knows this, right? He thought everybody would understand and be happy about the fact that they finally have a deliverer coming. But I don't think he had any idea. So he has this dream that he's going to be Israel's deliverer way before the burning bush comes along. But here's the thing. He didn't understand that to deliver Israel, he was going to have to leave Egypt. And this is the problem, you see, is that he had this dream, but he didn't have the full picture. And sometimes God puts us in this, but it has to grow. And we have to change. And Moses had to change before he could be this deliverer. Before this, you know, he was some kind of a hidden Avenger, or like a Batman character. I'm going to go out at night and kill them off one at a time and free them one more. It's going to take years, but I'm going to get them. You know, I don't know. I'll bury them. People wonder what happened. You know, the Hebrew Hammer. I'm going to be a new Marvel comic hero. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this. But I'm going to stay the Prince of Egypt. That's a pretty good gig. I mean, he's living in a palace. He has whatever he wants. You know, he's not living with the Israelites. No, I'm going down there and killing an Egyptian every now and then and try to bring justice to them. But I'm going to stay a prince of Egypt. So God was just letting him kind of grow a little bit here and say, no, that's not what you're going to be. I'm not going to have an Egyptian save my people. I'm having my person, my servant, my shepherd, which will save my people. You won't be an Egyptian when you save my people. But he hadn't grown to that point yet. See, your dream is a gift, but your destiny will always cost you. And you kind of have to know that. It's neat to have the vision, and it's neat to know that that's coming, and God has a purpose for my life, and that's great. But he's going to change us in order to make that happen, and sometimes in ways we don't want. Now, at the end of his life, I'm sure if you asked Moses, would you rather be a prince in Egypt, or would you rather be here? He'd say, here. But if you'd asked him back then, he would say, I'd rather be a prince of Egypt. And this is why God only gives us part of his dream, a little bit of time, while we grow into what he needs us to do. So anyway, so he goes out the second day, and he sees more beating. He's like, oh, again, okay, here comes the Hebrew Hammer. I'm going to go stop this. Only when he gets there, he finds out it's not an Egyptian beating an Israelite. It's an Israelite beating an Israelite. And he stops them, and he says to the one who was doing the wrong, why are you striking your companion? Why are you doing this? You know, I'm you know, the Hebrew Hammer here. I'll bring justice and truth to all of Israelites, right? So he's there. He says, why are you doing this? But he who did his neighbor wrong, it's always that guy, pushes him away and says, who made you a ruler and judge over us? Or do you want to kill me like you did that Egyptian yesterday? Now, Moses didn't think anybody saw that. He killed him and buried him in the sand. And this is a whole different guy. This guy wasn't there when he did that. So this is going to be a problem. But I want to back up to one thing here. Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Well, point of fact, God did. He'd actually already put this in his heart. And he was making Moses the ruler and the judge over all of Israel. In fact, he'd be the lawgiver and bring all the laws. All right, but this was too soon, right? So even though God had given him this vision, kind of like when he gave Joseph the vision when he was a young boy, even though he'd given him that vision, it wasn't time yet. So Moses was trying to do in his might and his power a dream that God had given him. That'll never work. You're not big enough for God's dream. You're going to need him in with you. Anyway, but Moses feared. He says, surely this thing is known. You go, oh, this got out. Now, listen, the prince of Egypt killing another Egyptian. That's no big deal. You should see some of the things Pharaoh's got away with. Pharaoh's son. The only reason I believe that this is a problem, because Moses knows Pharaoh is looking for a reason to get rid of him. He's too famous. He's too popular. That's a problem. So Pharaoh's looking for a reason to get rid of him, and he just gave him one. So when Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled and went to the land of Midian. It's an outskirt outside of Egypt. So when the priest of Midian, now the priest of Midian, this area, had seven daughters, and they came and drew water, and they filled the troughs of water for their father's flock, but the shepherds came and drove them away. Now, this is kind of a normal occurrence for them. There's women, they were really treated very badly in those days, especially in these kind of outlying communities. So these seven daughters being faithful to water the flock, they're down there early in the morning, filling up the troughs. And as soon as the shepherds see it, they say, oh, good, you filled up the troughs for our sheep. And they drive them away. They bring their flock in. And because they were low, you know, women on the totem pole, the guys were stronger, they couldn't do anything about it. They had to wait until all the other sheep in the area would get their fill and leave. Finally, they could give their flock water. And they would try to get down there early enough to beat it, but the shepherds would always be waiting for them. Oh, good. Look what they're doing. They're serving us now. And so this is kind of a normal occurrence. You'll see that in the next verse. This is not the first time this happened, but Moses is there this time. And he stood up and he helped them, which means he was a big, bad guy. He was a warrior. And he drove them off. And then he helped the women water their flock. So Moses stands up. He's a good guy. And so they came to Reuel, and I'll talk more about him in a minute, their father. And he told him, and he says, well, how are you home so early? Boy, you're home early. You have to wait as long. And they said, watch, an Egyptian delivered us. Isn't that interesting? How would they know he's an Egyptian? Not like he was wearing a shirt, property of Egypt or something, you know. How would they know he was Egyptian? Well, I believe Moses identified himself as an Egyptian. I believe when they talked to him, which they surely would have afterwards, I'm from Egypt. And that's how Moses identified him. He dressed like an Egyptian. He talked like an Egyptian. He probably told them he was an Egyptian. So they say, he's an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us and watered the flock. This was very unusual behavior for an Egyptian. And Reuel, by the way, sometimes also called it Jethro in the Bible. Never for me, because every time I hear Jethro, I think this. So anyway, if ever you're following along in the Bible and your Bible says Jethro, it's Reuel. He has both names. Reuel is just so much better for me than Jethro. Anyway, Reuel says to his daughters, where is he? Why would you leave a guy like this away? Bring him, that he may eat bread with us. You know, break bread, which is a big tradition. Get to know him. Let's get to know him. So they went and they get Moses, and he meets Reuel and the seven daughters again, and he has dinner with them. And Moses was content to live with Reuel. And Reuel then gives Zipporah, his oldest daughter, to Moses as a wife, and she bore him a son. So obviously some time is passing here. Now watch this. And he called Jesus, this is Moses' name. Remember, the Hebrew names are always significant, right? So this is the name he gives his son, Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a strange land. So he's basically, I am a wanderer in a strange land, and I will name my son after that in order to memorize, remember that, which is horrible. Think about that as a kid. This is your name, a stranger in a strange land. You're never going to feel home anywhere with a name like that. Anyway, but that is the name that he gives him. And so I think this really shows us where Moses was. He introduces himself as an Egyptian, And then he says, I'm a stranger in a strange land. I'm some say a sojourner. I'm traveling through. I'm just a stranger here. I don't belong here. And I'm in a strange land. Now, if this were a Disney movie, this is the point that the blue baboon shows up.
I think you're a little confused.
Wrong. I'm not the one who's confused. You don't even know who you are.
Moses didn't even know who he was. And a lot of times we think we're waiting on God, and the reality is God is waiting on us. He's not an Egyptian. And in order to understand this, we need to understand who the Midianites are. Now, we know that Reuel is a priest of the Midianites, but who are the Midianites? A little back up here again. I know we're doing a lot of history today. Backing up into Genesis, remember Abraham. So the covenant was given to Abraham, and Abraham had a wife, Sarah, who has a child at age 100, named Isaac, and that starts the tribes of Israel who end up being in Egypt, and that's them. But backing up now, Abraham's wife, Sarah, who is very beautiful, by the way, dies. And Abraham, being a spry 110 years old, wasn't done yet, so he takes another wife. You know, and her name was Keturah, and she bore him more children, because, you know, he wasn't done at 110. Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Midian then goes off and founds the land, and he must go to the Donald Trump name school of naming things. He just names everything after himself. So the land Midian was literally named after Midian, who is a son of Abraham, who is a cousin or great cousin of Moses. These are Jewish people, is what I'm telling you, in Midian. Right? They serve Jehovah. Reuel Jethro is a priest of Jehovah of Midian. So what you have to understand is that he was not a stranger in Midian. Moses was a stranger in Egypt. It would just take him about 40 years before he would realize that. So God is waiting on him. He's waiting for him to understand who he is. When he becomes God's shepherd, then he can take him back to do what God called him to do. But God was not going to send an Egyptian to save the Israelites. He's going to send one of his own people. And he's raised him up and he's prepared him for this moment. But Moses isn't ready yet. A lot of times we're waiting on the Lord. And actually the Lord's waiting on us. We have to mature. We have to get ready before we can accept the full impact of the dream that he has for us. Moses was not waiting on God. God was waiting on Moses to remember who he was. He was not an Egyptian. He was Jewish. So let's count up the scorecard for the Hebrew Hammer, our great fictional Marvel character that Moses was. So he tried to save one Israelite from oppression and doesn't, because he saved him for the day. But the next day, that Israelite's right back where he was before. He tries to get rid of one bad Egyptian, and he buries the body, and the body is discovered. So he is a big fat zero on the scoreboard. And that's where he was when he was going to be the deliverer the way he saw being the deliverer. In his might and his power, even though he was educated by the Egyptian schools, even though he was a great warrior, even though he was a great general, he was a complete failure as a deliverer because all the learning of man was not enough to get him ready for the vision that God had for him. He had to spend 40 years in God's university. First 40 years, the Egyptians had him. The next 40 years, God had him, and he had him in the wilderness. And over 40 years, God teaches him the truth. And then he gives him not a sword when he goes back. He gives him a shepherd's rod when he goes back. Because I don't need a warrior. I need a shepherd. And he sends him back. So when God comes back, when he comes back with God, and he goes back to do this, things end up quite differently. So in Exodus, we're going to jump ahead a little bit, and we're going to come back. We're not staying here, but I just want to give you a little preview of what's to come. Most of you know this story. Moses says to the people, now this is when they're standing in front of a body of water they can't cross, and the whole army of Pharaoh is crashing behind them. He looks and says, don't fear. Take your stand and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see them again forever. I love that. Never again forever. Ever. The Lord will fight while you keep silent. And the Lord says to Moses, tell the children of Israel to go forward, but lift up your rod, the shepherd's rod, stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. The children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea, and the Egyptians shall follow them. And then the Egyptians shall know that I am the one true God. So this isn't just about the deliverance. I'm going to teach Egypt a lesson here. So when this is all over, we're all going to know who the God is. Because Egypt's had a million gods, right? I'm the one true God, he says. And they will know it this day. So on this day, the deliverer of God raised up in God's university instead of Egypt's university. The results are quite a bit different. Day, the Egyptians will know that I am the one true God. By the way, I was watching that. No wonder he wanted a shepherd. Those Israelites are always running about like scared sheep. Anyway, so, but coming back in here to this whole thing, I love this. When Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, this is the Bible's account, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. The waters covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the armies of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. In Moses' might, Moses' power, with the teaching of the Egyptians behind him, he can't make one body stay covered for 24 hours. When God covers the bodies, they're never seen again. There's a reason why God is in charge of our destiny. Proverbs 3:5 says it this way, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight. This is the promise of God. You need to trust God with your dreams. Would everybody please pray with me?